everybody. Welcome to No Show. I'm Matt Brown, joined as always by Jeff Borman. And today's episode is inspired by something very personal. One of the most beautiful neighborhoods in America is located just outside of Alexandria, Virginia, Holland Hills. And in a few days from this recording, Holland Hills will host an enormously popular and long-running house and garden tour. This year, May 4th, celebrates the 75th anniversary of the neighborhood, now the largest mid-century modern home event on the East Coast. It was the first community in America to be made up entirely of contemporary homes. It's a 326-acre neighborhood south of Old Town that was built roughly from the late 40s to the early 1970s by developer Robert Davenport and architect Charles Goodman. It is listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 2013, and it is a Virginia Landmark Historic District. One of the homes in Holland Hills is owned by Jeff and his wife, Heather. And when they bought this house 20-odd years ago, I was agog. I couldn't believe it. It is a wonderland of straight lines, glass walls, and unrepentant ring-a-ding-ding charm. Jeff, how did you land this place?
Good luck and an even better friend. I will tell you, we did not have the neighborhood in mind, as so many people do. Right? There's a wait list to go buy now. Heather and I saw it for the first time at on a real estate listing, drove there and literally bought it on the spot. Best investment, best decision, and the whole thing took about 30 minutes. The first Holland Hills House and Garden Tour was in 1953. It was a madly avant-garde showcase of glass houses set in the woods. It was at the time a radical curiosity in Washington, D.C., in an era of center hall colonial design and Cold War, wholesome family values, and the greatest generation was just bringing the boomers into the world. And all of a sudden, here it is, this very strange group of eclectic artists and people who were willing to live without shades, right? Without blinds, and just open themselves up, both bringing the indoors out and the outdoor in. The event's a fundraiser to protect the architectural integrity and the public spaces, like the acres and acres of park. It takes 100 volunteers and a combined 1,000 hours from the neighborhood to pull this off. I have about 2,000 tickets sold out in just a couple of days back in November. It has an educational aspect to show off mid-century modern architecture from modern or contemporary. It's true mid-century.
This got us thinking about the growing business of architectural tourism. Touring architecture has been around as long as the Colosseum, but we are in a new era of architecture as tourism. And of course, Modernism Week in Palm Springs has heralded that era. Over 100,000 attendees, 350 events, $55 million in the local economy. And to help us unpack how the future began, today we are welcoming Jicky Torres. Jicky is director of content for Engaged Media. She's editor of Atomic Ranch. She is author of Atomic Ranch, Remodeled Marvels. And she is an uncontested expert on clean lines, cool surfaces, sweeping views. Jicky, welcome to No Show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Let's start at the start. What is Atomic Ranch and how long has it been around?
So Atomic Ranch, that term specifically refers to sort of this post-war architectural boom that happened that addressed two things. One was that you've gotten this kind of class of architects who were challenging the status quo, which at this time, the status quo was architecture like from the Victorian era and even as recent as the Craftsman era. And two, they were also looking for ways in this kind of post-war era to elevate or use or make an argument for the use of different types of materials for home building that were much easier to be mass produced. So we're talking about things like steel and glass, the things that allow for these huge windows and expansive use to take place. So it was kind of an experiment in kind of materials, but it was also addressing this concept of their concept of this is the way we should be living now as this post-war society. This is the way architecture needs to change to address the ways that we are, you know, living as families. You know, you look at some of these, which mind you, some of these designs emerged from the 30s, the 20s. They were so far ahead of their time that even as we look at them today in 2024, a lot of these designs are still radical and they're still futuristic looking. So I think there's this kind of general awe and curiosity around that.
Architecture in many ways is the highest form of art, right? You can actually live in that artwork. What's different about the demographic? What's unique about the attendees? The following is incredible. Who are these people?
Who are we? We are we are people who, so you're very engaged because this is a scarce commodity, right? The ability to get into these houses, which, as you say, have survived not only the test of time, but the test of, you know, sort of design gentrification, if you will. Especially in the last handful of years where the value of property is outrageous. And you're talking about structures that are 70 plus years old. Structures, again, if you're looking at what the masses describe as luxury and noteworthiness, it really goes against the grain. Whether you're a fan of modernism or architecture specifically, you would at least understand the value of the history of your own town being preserved and the history of your own town being explored, highlighted.
So do you have any statistics you can share with us about modernism-related tourism, economic impact of events like these? In addition to the Holland Hills House and Garden Tour, Modernism Week every February is certainly the most well-known. But you also have the Eichler Tour in LA, several big events in Columbus, Indiana. Arapahoe Hills in Denver used to do an event. I don't know if they still do. But you also then you have Falling Water and homes that people just, it's single properties, you know, often done by Frank Lloyd Wright, that people travel around the world to see. What kind of economic impact does the tourism have?
Well, yeah, I mean, as you mentioned at the top of the discussion, you know, I think the statistics for Modernism specifically have been updated, 130,000 attendees. We're talking 68 million in economic impact for the local communities. And here's the thing about Modernism Week in Palm Springs, and that's what I can really offer the most details about because it's the most really supported and funded and scientifically dissected. But it's the impact of Palm Springs, but it's also the impact of the surrounding desert communities, which Modernism Week as an organization have begun to identify as, you know, room to help, again, restore, preserve, you know, the architectural gems of other communities. Because Palm Springs is what's famous for it, but there's Desert Hot Springs, Palm Desert, La Quinta, the surrounding areas that have just as much of it, that kind of ripple effect of modernism history, or modernist history, I should say. And so I think you start to see the bigger these events become, the more like the concentric circle grows in the ways that it impacts more in a regional way rather than, you know, such a specifically nuclear way. You know, one of the things that I think these areas, the Eichler tours in California, you know, Charlotte, you said Denver, it's about the uniqueness of the availability of these homes, these swaths, these whole neighborhoods that were built that way to grow these. And this is one of the reasons why Atomic Ranch has such a, you know, specific mission statement to help these communities become like Palm Springs, become like Modernism Week, is because of the trickle down effect that it has, you know, in the surrounding communities, the small businesses in the areas that cater to restoring or decorating your mid-century modern home. There's a lot of layers to it, for sure.
We were trying to find numbers of architecture's direct impact on a local economy, but it's a real challenge. And I think it's very hard to gather that data in the aggregate because I think architecture-focused tourism is woven so deeply into just the very idea of what tourism is since like day one. But if you start to suss it out from certain city and country data, like take Italy, and in particular Rome, where the estimated tourist spend is just under like 6 billion pounds a year. And the reason you go to Rome is to walk around famous buildings. Over 400 million US dollars are attributed to visitors to the Sydney Opera House. Closer to home, tour-heavy Savannah, Georgia clocks in at about 4.4 billion in total visitor spending. That's everything. But Savannah is a pretty tour and architecture-driven town, especially given its size. That's a huge number. And travel and tourism is set to surpass, I think, something like $2.5 trillion in 2024 and 9% of the US economy according to the World Travel and Tourism Council, that's going to come from this sector, from travel and tourism. So the money is there. We just can't see how valuable these smaller architecture-based events really are and the micro impacts they're having, I think, all over the country.
Having seen more P&Ls than I'd like to from Holland Hills Community Association, this event provides almost 80% of the funding for, and it only happens every 2 years, but the funding to protect the design, to protect the parks, the maintenance that otherwise would not be kept up, 80% of that revenue comes from this one event. I'm going to shift a little bit, though, because when we talk about tourism and the attraction for modernism, it goes beyond house porn. You've got Frank Lloyd Wright's Biltmore, Arizona, that I know 15, 20 years ago, Heather and I took a trip to Arizona just because it was a bucket list item of mine to stay there. Saarinen's TWA Hotel outside LaGuardia is probably America's biggest, newest attraction, the rebuild of that. Is there a community that does these hotels, that travels around?
Yeah, I think there's certainly an opportunity here to be more organized about that. But yes, I mean, the business of modernism tourism, for example, Modernism Week being the biggest kind of international modernist event, 50% of the attendees are from California, but there are actually 24 countries represented in that tourism group. I know I see this reflected in our kind of subscription, demographic. Australia, Canada, the United Kingdom, Germany, France, I mean, they all come to Modernism Week for that. But what this really touches on is that in the modernist era, and for fans of modernist architecture and design, you do have this phenomena, which is that you've got these what they call starchitects, right? Frank Lloyd Wright, Eichler was a developer, but his collection of homes, I mean, there's this sort of driving fascination to visit these locations that are done by these famous starchitects. You cross them off the bucket list, there's also this idea that modernism is regional, and that because we're talking about architecture and we're talking about homes, what worked in Palm Springs didn't work in Denver because of the climate. It didn't work in the Pacific Northwest, again, because of the weather. And so there were different types of modernism that really flourish in these regional locations. And I think modernist fans like to go and see that too. I mean, it's the variation on the theme, right? And so I think that there's this idea of sort of collecting a list of the homes you've been able to see, because their claim to fame is your claim to fame.
Yeah, maybe. Here's an idea for Atomic Ranch. You should have an old Pan Am flight operated just to tours like these, in every smoking encouraged throughout the plane.
I'm for it.
Maybe a bus. Maybe a smoking bus.
I'll start with the bus.
Are there any particularly endangered species of modernism that you'd encourage people to go visit?
All of them are. So my encouragement is to go to these home tours, go to these neighborhood events, because your ticket price goes towards strengthening the preservation groups that are involved in organizing them, those once or two times a year. But there are also these preservation groups work all year long to effectively keep some guidelines around these, how these homes are treated, draw attention to, and create things like petitions and, kind of local movements to save them. I mean, I don't think any area is particularly immune. I just saw an article the other day, and maybe this is something that gets cut or maybe it's not, but I saw this article the other day about the actor Chris Pratt and his wife, Katherine Schwarzenegger, how they had recently bought this home in this neighborhood to be close to their mom. And it was designed by Craig Elwood. And it's a stunning piece of modernist architecture and history in LA, which, you think that LA is, has a pretty good awareness of mid-century, treasures and whatnot. And he bought it and he raised it and it's gone. And he's going to build a modern farmhouse over it. So I think that you know, my message would be to pay attention to what's going on in these preservation groups in these neighborhoods and support them in whatever way you can. Follow them online and get their numbers up and buy a ticket to a tour or a lecture. Because the work that these guys are doing, these groups are doing in these communities, really hands-on, that's the best way to save these, you know, these structures. And frankly, you talk about an area like Denver, which I feel like per square mile, like sheer volume has the most number of mid-century era homes and ranches built, somewhat related to kind of the aeronautic history of Denver. But a lot of those homes are endangered because you've got these first-time home buyers who find homes that are kind of right in their bracket, and they are attracted to it because of price and location and have no clue about the architecture and are, you know, at a rapid rate, remodeling them, as we'd say in our industry, where you're stripping them of their, you know, mid-century character and features and elements in favor of, you know, brand spanking shiny kitchens and windows and, you know, what have you.
Is the argument when you have buyers take over and just level the place, is the argument that it's just too much money and too much hassle to rehab it?
Oftentimes they do. But also because even some of the most, I would say, you know, luxurious, most high end of these mid-century homes. And I've been to the ones in Palm Springs that was, you know, owned by Sinatra, owned by Dean Martin. I mean, by today's standards, they're still modest, right? Like square footage wise, space wise. And so again, you look at this piece of property, which has this particular prescribed value to it. And the way that you as a homeowner, builder, developer, or investor try to maximize that is to put a piece of property on it that actually matches up with kind of your generalized buyer's wish list. And those two rarely, you know, really overlap. And so that tends to be what happens.
In hotels, we see a lot of the same, you know, investor debates, right? You buy this incredibly old building that's beautiful and it has a fanfare to it. And then you look at it and you think, okay, we can put $200 million into restoring this fabulous old building. Or like the Waldorf Astoria in New York City, let's just tear it down. And I think that difference is very stark. I mean, even if you take, you know, Blackstone, who owned the Waldorf in New York City and just recently sold the Biltmore, Arizona. They looked at those two investments very differently. I don't have any insight into it, but I can tell you that one sold for about $1 billion and got demolished. The other, they poured immense funding into restoring it and profited by the tune of about $250 million. But I think the two are very different approaches, and it doesn't usually work out in favor of preserve the architecture financially.
I have seen, you know, that kind of faction of tourists that, you know, is looking for those unique experiences. They're looking to, I mean, you can think of, you mentioned the TWA Hotel, but there's a lot of historic hotel spaces across the country that are getting renovated and restored, and really people are leaning into, or sometimes even infusing that mid-century design style into it because of that interest. You know, these old motor lodges that were, you know, getting now turning into some of the hippest, coolest hotels in town. I think that's a reflection of the fact that people are looking for unique experiences, both where they live, but also how they vacation.
I was also thinking a little bit about the vibe of Modernism Week in Palm Springs, and I've never been. I want to go. And I've also never been to the Holland Hills tour. I want to go to that, but I'm going to have to wait 2 years to do that because I'm unavailable this time. There's a sneaky reason, not so sneaky reason, that I think these are popular too, in that they sort of access this idea of a house party. You know, I feel like the event in Palm Springs, it's like a week and a half. You're moving around. It's all kinds of cocktail parties. You're in and out of these different places. I know a lot of them, you can't just stick around and have a drink in somebody's backyard, but I think it's a big movable feast. It's a big party. And that as a draw for people, I think is really alluring from a tourism side. And I wonder how many other local groups are kind of thinking along those lines of like, let's turn this into not just a tour, but like a party that will go from Friday night to Sunday.
Absolutely. I mean, that's You know, that's, first of all, so the best way to lure people in, right? You promise them a good time. You make it convivial. You make it a fun gathering. And certainly in our own experience, you know, with kind of interacting with people who are traveling to this location and trying to buy a ticket, we hope they buy one of ours. Our experience in this is that when you do travel to that location, you don't want to have this, you don't want to learn these lessons in a hall or a lecture, a lecture room or a theater. You want to learn these lessons in this beautiful home. And for what it's worth, the events that we throw, you actually can have the drink in the backyard because our events last, you know, an hour and a half or 2 hours where we talk to the homeowner and the builder, whoever's responsible for the house. And we really do a deep dive with that 150 people who have come to spend that hour with us, 2 hours with us. And we want to make it convivial. We have drinks and refreshments and little appetizers that get passed. What's underscoring all of this is the celebration of this architecture and what has stood the test of time.
I've heard Atomic Ranch is doing a roadshow. What is this? What inspired this thing?
So I think this whole conversation is really right in line with kind of what we've decided we want to try to do more of. And that is, you know, we, as I mentioned, Atomic Ranch's mission statement is to help these mid-century modern communities across the entire country to preserve, restore, and celebrate their mid-century modern communities. And we've always become, you know, we've been media sponsors for Modernism Week since 2017. And so we've become really well known for that. But I wanted to be able to take what is so beloved and so celebrated and so fun about what we do in Palm Springs and take that to other communities in hopes to, A, draw attention to these local mid-century neighborhoods that might need more awareness and might need more help and sort of letting the local community know what they have. B, to help fundraise for these organizations using hopefully our the Atomic Ranch brand recognition to draw more of an audience and our own marketing, you know, abilities to broadcast these events across to bigger audiences. And yeah, so this idea of taking this Palm Springs Modernism Week show on the road to these other locations was sort of born out of that.
It's time for the mystery question, and this is a fun one. They're all fun, but this one's particularly fun. Chicky, for your many years of service to modernism, the powers that be have decided to pool their money and award you any modernist house in California. You get the deed, you get the keys. What house would you choose?
Oh, this is like a Sophie's Choice moment, I think.
But more serious.
More on the line. You're right.
Yeah.
Gosh, I think there are so many incredible sort of out of this world, mid-century modern iconic properties. I would probably, if I put the layer of reality over this, I'd probably try to stay in Southern California. And it would be a toss-up between the Stahl House, which is right there iconically in the hills of LA, the overlooking and Julia Shulman, you know, the amazing fashion photography, all of the stuff that has happened at the house. Because it's just, the story of it is so unique. The location of it is so unique. It's just so iconic. It'll be a toss up between that and the Goldman Sheets house. Talk about badass, you know?
The Jackie Treehorn home.
It was in the Big Lebowski. It's got like this triangular like roof with this triangular pattern underneath, and it's like the pool, like two sides of it is open to the pool, which kind of is an infinity pool. It's been in so many movies. I'm gonna text you a picture of it when we get off this. Once you see it, you're gonna be like, oh God, yeah, duh.
I think it actually comes with Jeff Bridges lounging on the couch.
That'd be great. Wow.
For $27 million, you can have the home. For $27.9 million, you get one day with Jeff Bridges lounging around like the dude.
Sold. And he'll make you all white Russian.
Sold. I love it. Chicky, thank you for being part of the show. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Well, speaking of Atomic Ranch on the road, we've got an event coming up in May. We're going to go back to the Shag House in Palm Springs because that event sold out way too fast. There's way too many people who are interested in visiting it. So we're going to be doing a series at the Shag House. I'm going to be traveling to Bellevue, Washington in September to do a house up in Pleasure Point, which is not only designed by George Bell, but it's George Bell's personal home, personal residence. And I'm working on more. You can go to atomicranch.com to find out more information about those. And I mentioned our book, Atomic Ranch Remodeled Marvels, for anybody who's interested in what it takes to renovate one of these homes. That is going to be your Bible.
Chiqui Torres, everybody, thank you so much for being part of No Show.
Thank you, guys. What a fun conversation. Thanks for having me.